Well, how do you reflect on a performance like that? Obviously a tough first half and you got away with it. What are the lessons you've learned?
There are a few parts of it that are relevant to this week and the next sort of little period of time within the season around the way we played. Then there are some parts that aren't that relevant, to be honest. I mean, there are occasions where luck plays a role within games, and I think we're a bit lucky. That was the sort of summary. Can't control really the way the opposition kick for goal, especially with their set shots. So we're a bit lucky on that front. But the other thing is we play at Marvel once for the year. I guess there's an outside chance if we're good enough to make the finals, we might play there again. But the game is played very differently there. We just didn't adjust very well to that. But then there were some other parts of our game that just weren't quite where we'd like them to be. But it certainly wasn't because we underestimated St Kilda. We went into the game thinking that they were back to the team they were for the majority of last year, which was well and truly sort of entrenched within the top eight. So that's the attitude we take into the Gold Coast as well. If we allow them to play the way they've played at their best, which has been pretty good, you know, we've seen that only recently against Sydney up there, then we're going to have a hard day in front of us. So that's kind of the way we've looked at the performance last week and what we need to adjust going into this week.
There was a bit of discussion post-game about holding the ball. Just in a broad sense, is there anything, do you have a particular view on the way it's
Yeah, I do. And the most important part of my view is understanding, one, what the rule is, and two, the way it's interpreted. And I guess my takeaway would be, it seems that there are some people that think that rewarding the tackler is the most important thing. And that's not the rule. And until the rule changes and says that you're not entitled to a prior opportunity if you haven't had prior opportunity, the ball gets knocked out in the tackle, then, you know, I think it's incumbent on everyone, including sort of the media commentators as well, to understand exactly how the rules interpret. And I think the umpires have been quite clear with us. Obviously, there's individual variations within umpires, and sometimes there is a little bit of a tightening or loosening of the interpretation, but I think we understand the rule pretty well. And I guess taking a step back, the important thing within games, I think, is that it's consistent for both teams. So there are a lot of tackles in our game on Friday night. I think St Kilda got 3 holding the ball decisions and we got 2. So it seemed to me to be pretty consistent. It certainly wasn't one where I came away from the game thinking that was a huge issue, but I understand that other people have different views that they're entitled to.
Chris, Brendan Parfitt wasn't on our injury update that we received as media yesterday, so we're ready with that there's no issue with the hand.
No issue, no. He got stood on, had it looked at, he's fine.
Do you anticipate making many changes this week? Luke Dalhaus is the one that looks like to be the, you know, he was close last week, would be close again this week, but we looked at, you know, stability potentially this week with the 23.
Well, it just depends on how a few of those guys that are coming back from injury come to hand post our session today, probably. So Dalhaus is one of those, and College Asney is the other one that's looking like he might be available. So need to wait a little bit longer, I think, for O'Connor and Myers in particular. But College Asney and Dalhaus will come into our squad, and then we'll just need to assess how the period between now and Saturday goes.
Does the VFL game tomorrow night throw things out slightly that you potentially might, you know, get 27, 28 blokes as a squad, so to speak, to, you know, then make final calls come Saturday?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be quite that many, Kingy, but it will be a few. Yeah, it's always a challenge when your VFL team plays 2 days before your AFL team. As you know, the way we run our system, you know, even 2 days out, we're often lacking a bit of clarity around sort of health and fitness of our team. So we're certainly going to be there tomorrow night, so we're just going to have to hold a few over and wait to see how the 48 hours pre-game transpires.
What have you made of Gold Coast's sort of form this year? It seems like their best is really good, but then their worst is probably, you know, the gap is quite significant between the best and the worst. Is that how you've seen them, or?
A little bit. We tend not to focus too much on teams' worst. We just assume we're going to get their best. But, I mean, there is something in teams playing poorly. I don't think it's all in their control. You know, often it is their opposition forcing them to play a certain way. So that's we've had a little bit of a look at that, and I think the parts of the game that they're good at and where they struggle are reasonably obvious, but it's the same for the best teams as well. Like, you look at Richmond, it's pretty clear the way you need to play. The challenge is actually executing that.
Max King could have been a different story had he kicked straight on the weekend, but still took a lot of marks in that forward 50. How much do you have to weigh up the mark with subs conversation, considering Ben is a similar prospect this week? And
very similar, yeah.
And just where you're sitting at, Mark, even you were undersized last week and they got hold of your times.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it was... Max and Ben are really good players, so you can jump at shadows a little bit and focus too much on one player. And I understand your point, but there are a few kind of if, buts and maybes in that assessment. And if it was a bit different, we may have shifted. But, it's a constant debate that we have internally around where Blitzarves is best served. But I don't think it's new, us playing him up the ground a bit more. No, go on.
Yeah, it's more because Harry's retired and just a lack of height down there. It feels like this year it changed a little bit given of what you've had down there in previous seasons.
Yeah, it has, and I think it will change again. I'm just not exactly sure what that change will look like. So last week was a little extreme for us because if you compare it to last year, we didn't have Taylor, but we didn't have Colajasny as well. So that was probably as much as anything inside Marvel, the extreme end of the sort of decision for us, and the fact that we didn't change it probably is a bit of a pointer to where we're thinking, at least in the short term at the moment. But we think we've got flexibility in our team as well, so we'll keep talking about it. But yeah, I think the Geelong are a better team with Blitzarves at full back argument is starting to struggle a little bit if you look at the last 30 games or so.
Where's Reece standing in part of that conversation? Where is he at, and what's your conversation with him in terms of what he needs to do to get back into the 22?
Oh, I mean, he's still in the conversation around our number one ruckman. I mean, I've still got a lot of confidence in what Reece can do. We've decided to go with a different structure in the last couple of weeks, but it doesn't preclude Reece getting back into that team. I thought he played well in the VFL on the weekend. If he doesn't play this week, it doesn't mean that he's further away. I think he's a really good option for us, should we tweak the structure that we've gone with over the last couple of weeks. But it's been a little while since we've had Fort, Stanley, Radigalia all fit and match fit. So match fit and healthy. So, yeah, we're very open-minded as to how all that's going to evolve.
That Zach Tui talk the other
night,
is that just a Marvel Stadium special, or are we
going to
see players given more of a
licence
to do that sort of thing? No, we've got
a few that are pretty good exponents, so yeah, we like it as a bit of a change-up. I think it becomes a bit predictable if you just kick barrels every time. But and the other thing is, it's not just... We've got a couple that can do it, so you telegraph it a little bit when your torpedo exponent goes down there. So, yeah, it's something we talked about a little bit and didn't expect it to go 90, but it'd be nice if you could do that every time.
Does it get practice in Fairview?
Yeah, it does with our guys, but I don't know across the competition, but, yeah, there are a few of them that can't help themselves.
The issue of where teams are scheduled to play their home games was brought up again last week when Richmond was scheduled to play its home game at Marvel.
Yeah.
Did you have a wry smile when Damien Hardwick was talking about not being able to play their games where they wanted to?
Oh. I didn't hear him talk about it. I heard Brendan Gale allude to it. No, I saw the aftermath of 18,000 people at Marvel, which is a poor result. I mean, that's a broader conversation around where we're at in the post-COVID world. I think I've been pretty clear, haven't I? I've said my piece. Like, just because I'm not going to expand on it today doesn't mean that my opinion's changed. But I've also been pretty clear that my opinion, I don't think, carries a whole lot of weight. But let me say it again. Like, the way the competition's structured with 22 games, I think it's pretty clear that every team should get 11 home games and they should get the opportunity to play them wherever they choose. I think that's probably the starting point of an equal competition. Now, when you happen to, I don't know, how many games have Richmond played at the MCG?
14 this year.
Yeah, I mean, so when you're saying, no, we should play 15, 16, 17, I think that's stretching the friendship a little bit.
Chris.
Yeah, go, Pete. You can't hide your body language back there, being a big Collingwood man, but...
Josh, I would mention at the start of the year, didn't think he'd play every game this season. What's your kind of take? Are you looking to give someone like him a rest at some point?
When it's appropriate, but I think there's a little bit of Joel managing expectations there as well, and we'd probably prefer that we under-promised a little bit there in terms of sort of our older guys and how much footy they might play. We're two games pre-bye at the moment, so I think we're starting to get to the point where if he's going to miss it, we'll be post-bye. We're certainly not in the mindset with anyone at the moment, or we're not seeing any signs where we think we need to be proactive with it. But I guess that's the definition of being proactive. You want to make the move before those signs appear. But no, I don't think this week, next week, we're thinking that way with Joel.
Just your midfield numbers, having looked at the first month compared to the last 5 weeks, pretty stark in terms of your stoppage differential and that sort of thing. Who have been the key drivers in that, from your perspective, to turn that around in the last little patch?
Well, it's been a good sign for us that Dangerfield hasn't played through that period. And, you know, he's not our best player. He's close, one of the best players in the competition, and we're confident he'll come back and improve us in that area, not to mention other parts of the ground as well. But we're really pleased with... So we take Selwood out of that equation as well. We're pleased with the way Guthrie and Parfitt and Duncan, and then the addition of Higgins and Smith, have changed us a little bit for the better. Now, we've had some guys come in like, you know, Quinton Narkle, who, you know, we're still very optimistic about as a player. I think he's had a real impact over the last couple of weeks. So I think the fact that I'm broadening the conversation to a big group of players sort of speaks to how we think it operates best, which is with a large group that can spread the load a little bit. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I'll probably speak to that part of it, because I guess at times we've had some really exceptional performers in there, and when you have that, the gap to the third, fourth, fifth player can look pretty big. I'm not sure that gap's looking that big at the moment.
Just on Joel, how much have you seen him take ownership of that in the last few weeks and sort of own that area?
Do you mean ownership of the spread?
And then just the preparation and the output, because without Dangerfield in there, and I know a lot's relied on him previously in terms of what Joel's been able to do and get that group humming at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think he's been fantastic, but I think he's been really good in sort of playing his role within it and broadening the responsibility to others as well. He's always been an influence in the preparation and the way we go about it, and that part hasn't changed. But I don't think I can remember a time where he's had the confidence in the big group of players around him to get the job done. It's not... Obviously, Dangerfield hasn't been there, but it hasn't been... We're under pressure. We need Selwood in there as much as it may have been in the past.
Chris, has Shannon Neal rejoined the group? I understand he went home to WA.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's back. Yeah. Yeah. So he went back for... We don't talk about it very often, but it's commonplace in our program that throughout the year we try to... And it's been harder, obviously, with the COVID situation, but we try to plan for periods of the year where players can get taken out of games, and then they have different priorities. Sometimes it actually is just getting back and seeing their family and training a bit more independently. Other times it's coming out to increase their training load or decrease their training load. So it's not unusual.
Yep. Just Paul Savitolas, what's the plan? NAB League boys resumes this week. Do we expect him to play the next block with Western, and then we might see him at VFL a little later in the year?
Yeah, so we've got a bit of a flexible, sort of open-minded approach to how that's going to play out. But one of the challenges with developing ruckman on your list is that there aren't that many spots for ruckman in the team, and you've got to manage what it means for the others if you're playing four ruckman in one team. So that's the way it impacts the team is a factor, but We've got a pretty specific plan for, you know, I said it's flexible and it is, but Paul's a long-term project, so we don't jump at shadows too much if he's a little bit impacted by the sort of week-to-week ramifications.
You got a spot open for the mid-season draft?
Not at the moment. No, not at the moment. So we would need a long-term injury for that to open up. But we're definitely looking at Aaron Sandilands. I mean, so, yeah, if we need to create a long-term injury...
Then you could just confirm that.
I'd like him. I'm on record. Aaron, if you're listening.
Just to ask really quickly, what do you think lies as to what he's got to prove today or what he's actually dealing with?
I'll do my best, Mitch, but it is a complicated one. It's a thoracic spine issue that resulted in some spasms. So we thought he was going to be available. As you know, with the way if there's a chance a player's going to play, we pick him in the team on Thursday night. And he just wasn't confident that if he had the episode he had during the week and it spasmed up, that he'd be able to play. So that's where we got to.
Thanks, Paul.